We want to welcome everyone to what we hope is an audience listening to our first podcast from the Children's Education Alliance. We've decided to call it Policy Perspective with the Children's Education Alliance, and we'll be doing these, we hope, on a regular basis. My name is Peter Franzen. I'm the Director of Development with the Children's Education Alliance, and I'm here today with our two other full-time staff members, Lisa Clancy, who is our Program Manager.
Hello.
And Kay Casas, who is our State Policy Director.
Hello.
So maybe we should just, I've introduced myself. Maybe, Kate, do you want to say a little bit more, introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kate Casas, and as Peter said, I'm the State Policy Director for the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri, and the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri is a policy organization that focuses on three main areas in the education reform arena, and that is creating a system that has lots of accountability and transparency, increases the amount of parental choice available to Missouri's families. So, and another way to say that would be the increase the number of options for kids in terms of school. So what the kinds of schools they can go to, where those schools are, what their focus is, that sort of thing. And then the third is improving teacher quality, which includes how teachers are evaluated and how they are hired and retained. So those are the three main areas that the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri focuses on, because we believe those are the three areas that we need to change at the sort of systemic level to improve outcomes for Missouri's children.
That's fantastic. Well, and in fact, if people are listening to this podcast, then they probably found it on our website, which means they have access to a whole bunch of information about what we're doing in our policy perspective. So that's great. And Lisa Clancy, as program manager, you've been busy in the office with Parent Academy. Mm-hmm. You want to say a little bit about our programmatic work through Parent Academy?
Yeah, so we recently decided to launch the SEAM Parent Academy, and the purpose of the Parent Academy is to bring parents to the table and teach them about how policy is made and how really to get them involved in the policy work that is being done in terms of education. We believe that parents have a valuable perspective to provide when it comes to the decisions that are made every day that impact their kids, specifically in terms of schools and education. And we need better ways to bring parents to the table and involve them in those conversations and decisions. And that's exactly what the Parent Academy is about. So through the Parent Academy, we hope to give parents the tools they need, organizing, policy, and communication in order to be effective partners to promote better policies, education policies that will have an impact on their kids, a positive impact on their kids.
So we're always trying to reach a broader audience. You can find the Children's Education Alliance online, certainly on our website and on Facebook. We produce a printed newsletter, and we felt like a podcast would be another great way to reach people in sort of a different format, much more conversational. And so with Policy Perspective, over time, we hope to bring you a variety of topics, guest speakers, people from around Missouri who are involved in education reform. And today's podcast is probably going to be on the shorter side of things, but we wanted to take this opportunity to tell you a little bit about ourselves as the staff people involved and what brought us to education reform and why we're so passionate about it. And one person, Lisa Clancy, who's been with the organization now for a few months and prior to that came to us as a practicum student while she was working on her MSW at Washington University, I know is very passionate about this topic. So maybe, Lisa, you want to start off and tell us a little bit about how you got here and what your take is on education reform and parental choice.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. As Peter mentioned, I just finished my Master's of Social Work program at the Brown School at Washington University in May, and I joined the SEAM staff shortly after that. Before I started my master's program, I was actually a teacher. I did Teach for America in New Orleans, where I was a special education teacher in a self-contained classroom, elementary. And I've always thought of myself as someone who wants to make things better for kids. I was a teacher, and as a teacher, I realized that there are decisions that are made every day that have such, both inside the classroom and outside of the classroom, that have such a huge impact on kids. And I wanted to use my experience as a teacher to go into advocating for better decisions to be made. I think first and foremost, I see this as a child welfare and child advocacy issue. And I think that one of the best ways we can make things better for kids is by promoting better education policies. So in the areas of parent choice, accountability and transparency, and teacher quality.
So. Well, I can relate to that. You know, I've told you before that I came to St. Louis 20 years ago after college to do what I thought was going to be a year of volunteer work, and that, of course, has turned into me staying and living here in St. Louis for the last 20-plus years. I tell people often, back then, 20 years ago, my perception of the idea of parental choice, of school choice, seemed like an issue that didn't really make sense to me, or a perspective that didn't make sense to me. I was a product of public education and really was sort of single-minded about what the education infrastructure should look like in this country. Over time, though, over the last 20 years, I've worked in and around low-income communities. I've seen families essentially suffer for a lack of choice when the only option is to send your kid to a failing school down the street. It's really not much of an option. Over those 20 years, I've been involved in and around public schools. I was executive director of a school-based mentoring program that had over 700 volunteers in the public schools. And I've substitute taught, I've worked with other programs in and around the public schools. And the reason that I'm now at a totally different stance on this, and why I'm so passionate about what we're doing, is really that I've just come to the conclusion that we're just not gonna fix it from the inside. We've spent a lot of money on public education over the last 40 years. We've more than doubled the real dollar spending, and the results have not indicated that throwing more money at the problem is going to resolve the issue. And I really feel as though we've got to think about a different paradigm, a different model for what education is going to look like in the 21st century. And I think that school choice is really what's going to lead to that. But I don't want to take up all the time. I'm very passionate about it. I really can't. I've told people a lot, as development director, it's impossible for me to raise money for an organization where I'm not 100% behind it, and so it's very easy for me to go out and talk to people about what the Children's Education Alliance is doing and raising awareness and raising support for it. And I also had the honor of working with Kate Casas, who has a very diverse experience, including on the national scene. And so, Kate, tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Sure. I mean, I think like Peter and Lisa, there's been a sort of evolution of my, you know, career and passions. And so, you know, if going back all the way to when I was in high school and college, much to my parents' chagrin, I thought then that I wanted to do some sort of public relations and you know, get really rich, like defending oil companies or airports or something like that. I mean, that was, you know, somewhere along the line I got that notion. And, you know, over the course of exposing myself to issues when I was in college and, you know, taking a few trips and whatnot, I realized that really, you know, what I was passionate about was trying to, you know, make systemic change in lots of different areas of policy and in particular politics. I got really interested in politics in college and how the political system worked and all of that sort of thing and how policy affects politics and vice versa. And I after college I went to DC and did some lobbying and organizing and communications work for a low-income housing advocacy organization, and that was that was a wonderful experience. And what I did in that job was a lot of organizing work, but also taking members of Congress to various public housing developments and around the country, you know, in Appalachia and New York and Florida and, you know, all over. And, you know, I was there for about 3 years. And what I realized in all those different places that the one issue that I always heard the residents there talk to their elected officials and other influencers about was the fear that their kids weren't going to be able to do something different or get something better because there wasn't a good education opportunity for them. And after the 2004 election, I got really, you know, disenchanted with the system. And I just felt like we were doing the same things over and over. You know, every August I'd pull out the same press release about the budget. And then in October, I would go talk to the same members of Congress, or I'd call the same people in the media and say the same things that I'd said a year ago. And nothing was really changing. So one day I took a leap of faith and I applied for Teach for America and decided, you know, if I can't fix poverty by giving everybody a house, maybe I can fix it by giving, 25 kids at a time a good education. And so I applied for Teach for America and was accepted. And it's funny because I lived obviously in D.C. at the time with my now husband, and we were certain that I would get placed in Washington, D.C. or Baltimore. And originally those were the only two cities I was going to tell Teach for America that I would move to, thinking, or that I would teach in, thinking I wouldn't not then have to move. And at the very last minute, I decided, what the hell, I'll just put St. Louis as an option. I grew up in Central Illinois and had a brother that lived in Wildwood here in St. Louis County. And so I put it in. I didn't even tell my husband that I'd done it. And so then when I got the acceptance letter, he read it to me on the phone while I was at work. And he was like, it says you're going to St. Louis. And he had actually been here in 2004 working in Jefferson County, South St. Louis County in Jefferson County on a presidential candidate campaign. And I won't name the candidate, but needless to say, he didn't fall in love with the area during the 2004 presidential election. So he was less than thrilled, but nonetheless, I convinced him that we should move here. Move here to St. Louis, and like the good guy that he is, he came along and ended up falling in love with the city. But so I did my 3 years teaching and was a real public school advocate while I was in the classroom, particularly my first 2 years. Had a pretty bad experience in my third year teaching, and we'll talk about that maybe in another podcast, but decided after that to leave the classroom, and I went and worked for a company that builds houses, manages houses, and does some human capital development. And I did education policy for them and worked a lot with public schools and with charter schools and with other kinds of child service providers. And that really, you know, that really brought to my attention that, you know, we could build beautiful houses and we could provide all the wraparound services that I'd spent, you know, 10 years telling people we needed to be able to educate kids. But at the end of the day, if parents didn't have a good choice and they weren't an informed consumer because there was no accountability or transparency, or the teachers in the building that the kids were forced to go to weren't producing good results, that it didn't matter. Kids still weren't learning to read. They still weren't learning to do math. And maybe most importantly, they weren't really learning to think. And so when the opportunity to come work for the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri arose, I really couldn't pass it up, because while I loved that job, I felt like, you know, when I looked around the state, this was the organization that really I felt like was the missing piece. You know, there are people out there who focus on fixing poverty, and there really are people out there that focus on these wraparound services, healthcare, and whatnot. But I didn't think that there was anybody who was really saying, no matter how unpopular it was, that there are a lot of classrooms where our teachers aren't doing a good enough job. And there are a lot of places where our schools really are failing kids. And we don't have a system where parents really are being an informed consumer about the education that their kids are getting, not because they don't want to and not because they're not smart enough, but because the information isn't there and isn't accessible. And so, you know, that's what the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri does. And that's why I'm here. I think we've really hit the nail on the head about what's missing and what people aren't saying, even though they know it to be true.
Right. I think that a lot of times one of the toughest parts about what we're talking about, I think education, of course, is very near to people's hearts. Public education is held in high regard by a lot of people. When we start talking about teachers, I think that sometimes it's misconstrued as teacher bashing, because we're talking about teacher quality and having only the highest quality people in the classroom. But it's really not that, and I think that that's really important to recognize that if we were talking about anything else, about having the best people do the job, there's a ton of great teachers out there, a ton, who I think often have their hands tied by the system and are not really able to fly the way that they really could. And I think in other cases, there are maybe folks who shouldn't be in a particular classroom.
Yeah, Peter and Kate, there was something I heard in both of your stories that really resonates with me, and that's poverty. I have my undergraduate degree in social work as well, and I've several practicums where I was in agencies doing a lot of direct service work, targeting low-income populations from a variety of angles. But, through that, I realized that, there's no big solution to fix poverty. And I think other people have probably said this more eloquently than I can right now, but I think education is probably the closest we have so far, making sure that kids have the education opportunities that they deserve and the high quality that they deserve. And so that's really where that's another big goal, I think.
I totally agree with you, Lisa. I think that really was my experience. I came here to do good work. I worked in low-income communities. I lived and worked in low-income communities in St. Louis. And that really was my perspective, that I thought somehow, we could come here and provide all these services to essentially eradicate poverty, lift people out of poverty with social services. But that problem is huge. And I think that given a choice, the notion of fixing another system, fixing education, which I see as much more of a closed system, something mm-hmm. that we can actually tackle.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think if we can get kids educated, that's how people are going
to
get
out
of poverty.
And I think there's a role for all of us to play, but I think this goes back in, too, to what Kate was saying about the missing piece. And I often get the question a lot, like, you're a social worker. What are you doing in an education reform organization? There is this role to play, and there's such a need for strong advocates right now. And that's what social work is about, so that's why I'm here.
Right. And, I think it's important and, to flip the argument on its head, probably from the people that we've all three worked with in our careers up to this point, is this notion that if you look at the achievement gap between low-income kids and non-low-income kids, a lot of the people I've worked with up to this point think, well, the way to close that is to make there be no low-income kids. And through my work and what I'm, I think I'm hearing both of you say and know because we work together and talk about this for more than 40 hours a week most of the time, but is that we look at it the other way. The way to close the achievement gap is to educate children so that they're no longer in that low income group, not to get rid of the low income group and then you can educate kids, because I don't think that we're going to get to that point. I mean, we in a capitalist society, there will always be some children that have less money than others, and the point is, can you educate those children so that they can get out of that group,
see the possibility of a different future for themselves.
Right.
Because that's one of the things, I'm sure that in this current economy, people are feeling it a bunch of different ways. But I know that for college graduates and people with graduate degrees, that the unemployment rate is, I don't know, you might even know, okay, like 4.4%.
Yeah, it's about half of the national average, sure.
And I think that, and those numbers, of course, any level of education seems to impact that, just having a high school degree going on for an associate's or a bachelor's degree. And that's what I think this is about, is providing quality opportunities so the kids can get a quality education, and I think that's really what's going to change their life path.
Right. I agree. And So to sum up this conversation, we really, all three of us have come here through different paths, and I think people in our lives kind of are looking at us, this is not where I thought you would end up or what you would end up doing, but here we are, and I think we each have a unique evolution for how we got here, and makes us a pretty well-rounded organization and pretty well-grounded in our beliefs about why we're doing what we're doing and why we're offering the solutions that we're offering.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, I think over time, hopefully folks who are listening to this will tune in and listen to future podcasts. They'll get to know the three of us over time, because we'll be participating in the podcast. We have one last segment that we want to try out on you today. We had this idea for something that we want to call Vantage Point, and give an opportunity for a little commentary. And as it turns out, our own state policy director, Kate Casas, recently had a piece appear in the, was it in the Post?
It was.
In the Post-Dispatch. And so we're just going to let Kate, and we hope in the future to have other folks come and bring their perspective, their vantage point via a commentary. So, Kate, we're going to let you do your thing.
Sure. And then I think, you know, this piece probably lends itself to us spending a few minutes afterwards discussing, you know, discussing. So, you know, and I'm just going to read, so hopefully none of you get bored while I'm reading this really short piece. On Tuesday, September 17th, the Missouri State Department of Education voted unanimously to classify the Normandy School District as unaccredited due to chronically low academic performance. The Children's Education Alliance of Missouri applauds the state board's decision, but fears that without drastic policy changes, little will improve for the students in the district as a result of their classification status. One doesn't have to look far to see that our fears aren't unfounded. For example, St. Louis Public Schools has been unaccredited since 2007, and still today, 7 out of 10 children aren't reading on grade level, 2 out of 5 won't graduate in 4 years, and the average ACT score is just over 16. SEEM is hopeful that the State Board of Education and other advocates for children will help create a system that will allow children to thrive. We believe this includes a transparent system for rating schools that will give parents a clear understanding of the school's quality, more high-quality school options, and a system for evaluating, hiring, and retaining teachers based on student performance. History has shown that just labeling a district unaccredited will not change student outcomes, so I am hopeful that we can do it differently this time.
That was Kate Casas, SEEM State Policy Director. Kate, say a little bit more about the rating system and this whole school accreditation. And have you met anybody who's been able to explain the current accreditation system very well to you? Because it seems like a pretty foggy idea sometimes.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, they have created this system, and really once you understand it, it makes sense. I mean, the things that they rate schools on are valid points of that they are giving. I mean, they're four valid outcomes, I should say. But the trouble is that most people, and when I say most, I mean like 99.999% of the people in the state, couldn't tell you what the annual performance report is, and the annual performance report is what they base accreditation decisions on. So the system has 14 points, and I'm not going to be able to recite them all here, but 5 of them are what we call academic points based on how well students do on the statewide standardized Missouri assessment program. And then the other points are things like graduation rates and teacher quality and
financial stuff. Is that
financial,
part of it?
Whether or not you're financially sound and you're following the law about attendance and hours of, hours that kids are in school and stuff like that. And so the idea is that if you have between 9 and 14 points, that you are what we call, and this is on a district-wide basis, if you have between 9 and 14 points, you are what we call an accredited school district. If you have between 6 and 9 points, and at least one of them is an academic point, you should be considered for what we call a provisionally accredited district. And if you have fewer than 6 points or you have no academic points, then you are what we call an unaccredited district. Now, to add a layer of confusion, that will change starting next August. There will be an additional accreditation status called accredited with distinction. But for now, you know, you should consider an accredited district is sort of average. You know, some of them are obviously above average, but for the most part, you think of an accredited school district as average. And you think of as a provisionally accredited school district as below average, and an unaccredited district as having failed. So that is the current system we use, and we do not currently accredit or grade or label individual schools at the state level. And the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri views this as problematic Because what does it say to a parent that the whole district is unaccredited? Should the parent believe that that means there's no schools within that school district that are worthy? Does it mean that their kids aren't worthy because the district's unaccredited and they don't have anywhere else to go? You know, it doesn't really tell you much besides that the grown-ups that are, you know, running that district or working in that district have in some way failed the students. But that doesn't, you know, probably help parents sleep very well at night because they still have to get up the next morning and get their kid ready to go to a school that is presumably failing. So what we would like to move to is not getting rid of the district-wide accreditation labels, because there is some validity in that, and there are laws that, you know, apply to different accreditation statuses differently. But we would like for parents to be able to say, you know, this school is an A, and the closest thing that are a B or a C or a D or an F or whatever, the closest thing that I know of that's like that is the restaurant, what the health department does to restaurants. You know, I would never even go in a restaurant that was a B. Right.
Me neither.
So, you know, so you think if we are so conscious of the quality of restaurant we're going to, we should certainly put that, at least that amount of thought, into whether or not we're recommending these as schools that parents should send their kids to.
Are there other states that are using like an A through F system?
Yeah, there are. There are a lot of other states off the top of my head. I don't know exactly how many, but the A to F rating systems that are the sort of premier ones would be in Florida and Indiana. Were the sort of leaders on this issue and have crafted at least what I think of as what Missouri should certainly look at. And like I said, the process that the Department of Education has created for accrediting school districts is certainly worthy of looking at and apply and trying to decide, is this something that we want to apply at the individual school? Could we tweak it a little bit so that it is simpler for parents to understand, so a parent really gets what an A means, what a B means, what a C means? But it would be really valuable information. And I tell people all the time, if we had had an A to F school rating system in Missouri, I can almost guarantee that there would not have been 3,000 children in the Imagine Schools, which were a series of, as most of you probably know, a group of charter schools that was forced to close for low performance. But if parents had been able to see a big fat F on that door, they probably would not have enrolled their children there, just like they wouldn't go to a restaurant with a big fat F on it, because everybody knows what that means.
Right. Wow. Well, that's certainly something. What, Clancy, Lisa?
No, I just was going to say, I think that this is a really important step towards making information accessible to parents and the general public.
Right.
We need to do a better job of that, and I think that this is something that's definitely a step towards that.
Right. And that's something that we live every day at SEEM. You know, I mean, Peter and Lisa, you guys know this. The phone calls we get almost always start with, I'm so lost. Where do I start? Where do I start when I'm looking for something else for my child? And right now, I mean, they put a lot of trust in us, and they don't know us from anybody. You know, they found us on the internet, or somebody has said, call these people, or, you know, whatever. And they trust that they, you know, what they're doing is trusting us to say, go look at these, to hear their stories, know the age of their children, and say, go look at these. You know, now I think that we're probably giving them good advice, but there should be something more grounded in evidence and research than that for parents in Missouri. And just be able to say to them, here are the A schools and here are the B schools that are open to you and your child of this age with these needs.
So in Florida and Indiana, where they've already implemented these systems, is this information housed online, like at the state education department, or
that's an excellent question. I mean, the model for this, the appropriate way, in my opinion, to do it would be that it is distributed in multiple ways.
Okay.
You know, so you would have it on individual school websites, you'd have it on school district websites, you'd have it on the state department website. It would have to be published somewhere, you know, like the local newspaper.
Are we we talking about a sticker on the door of the school, right, like at restaurants?
Exactly. It would be visible inside the school. If you had a D or an F, the school would be responsible for alerting parents to that when they came to register their kid, or to parents already in the school with a list of what your other options might be. That this information, we can't just blame parents because they don't know the information is there, or they don't know what it means. It is really, really, really the professional's responsibility to be the ones creating that informed consumer. You know, we don't want our education system to be like what we fault like credit card companies for doing, which is sending us, 8-point font or something when they're going to raise our interest rates or something. I mean, schools should not operate that way. You know, that shouldn't be the same. So it should be the responsibility of the adults, particularly when they failed the kids or when they have an excellent product. It should be their responsibility to try every single thing they can to tell the parents what product they're buying.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there's probably a lot more to say about that, but I think our first podcast, maybe we'll try and put the wraps on it, and you can look for future podcasts here. There's more information on the SEAM website. Again, we had Lisa Clancy, the Program Manager for the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri, Kate Casas, State Policy Director, and I am Peter Franzen. I'm the Development Director there. Feel free to call any of us if you have questions about what you heard today, and check out our website.